The next case is 08-1182, Home Depot USA versus William Wilkins, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Mastro.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Randy Mastro, appearing as counsel for appellant claimant Home Depot, and I ask to reserve 3 minutes of my time, Your Honor.
Your time there.
Thank you. Your Honors, the central question in this appeal is whether the state may retain sales tax payments advanced by the vendor as a trustee to assist the state in collections on credit transactions in connection with its own private label credit card program for its own special customers, where the customers, the responsible taxpayers under Ohio law, later default and never pay the tax. Now, this is not new territory for this court. This court, in the Chrysler financial case, visited this issue in the context of financing services and whether they might qualify for the refund. And Home Depot, like most national retailers, in order to comply with all 50 states' laws, credit laws, it retains by contract financing companies to help it administer its own credit program for its own special customers for use only to buy Home Depot products. Now, Your Honor's ruled there in a 4-3 decision that the financing company couldn't get a refund because the financing company wasn't the vendor who paid the tax under the statute. Even there, three of Your Honors, who still sit on this court, found that to be unjust enrichment to the state. But the law was settled that the financing company could not get the refund.
But does the financing company get to write it off as bad debt when it cannot collect it?
Your Honor, the financing company in this context, in the relationship, the unique relationship with Home Depot, and this is what the BTA found. Home Depot, by the financing terms that the compensation structure gives the financing company, prepays the bad debt loss component, then the financing company gets to, as a bad debt deduction, write off on its taxes, deduct the bad debt, but at the same time it has to recognize the substantial income it receives, which in fact is in excess of that bad debt. So as the uniform testimony was below, the financing company makes a profit and has to pay taxes on the net income.
But does Home Depot also write off the bad debt?
Yes, in the following way, Your Honor. It provides a merchandising discount or service fee, which the BTA recognized, Your Honor, was in fact set to take into account bad debt losses and to prepay them to the financing company. And then Home Depot deducts that business expense. And Your Honors, this is the nub of it. We have the financing companies found under Ohio law not to be the vendor, so it can't get a refund. Now we have the vendor here, and under Chrysler Financial, Your Honors made very clear that the purpose of the bad debt refund statute in Ohio is to, quote, permit the vendor to recoup a pro rata portion of the sales tax paid to the Department of Taxation based on the amount of the sales price that is not paid by the consumers. Well, now the vendor is here, and the vendor did pay the tax, and the vendor is the party entitled to the refund. Yet, the only party clearly not entitled to the refund is the state, and it clings to that money anyway with a strained construction of the statutory scheme to now try to deny the vendor the refund to which it is clearly entitled not only under the plain language, but the intent of Ohio law, as this court has made it clear in the Chrysler case. And Your Honors, I submit to you that this case really reduces to a discrete legal issue And that is the state's position that under the Ohio Bad Debt Refund Statute, the only way to interpret that statute is that even where the vendor paid the tax, even where the vendor structured the relationship such as the BTA recognized, it prepaid for the bad debt losses that would occur. Even under those circumstances.
That's the discount. You're talking about the discount.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Merchandising
but that doesn't
discount.
Go just to bad debt, does it?
Yeah, yes, absolutely, Your Honor. And the,
I thought the record was different other than that.
Your Honor, if I may, just refer you to
the
express findings of the BTA that I think make this clear. BTA, opinion on page 5, that's the appellate record on 13. Quote, with sophisticated modeling, the companies, Home Depot and the finance company, are able to predict with some accuracy the cost of running the programs. BTA finding, page 6. Quote, as Home Depot prepaid actual bad debts, it asserts that its refund claim should not have been rejected. Further finding of the BTA, Home Depot provided the evidence of the defaulted accounts for the refund periods. That's also on page 6. And, quote, Home Depot brought forth evidence that a consideration of potential losses for non-payment is made in setting merchant fees for private label credit cards. Same page 10. And the BTA recognized, quote, the fact that bad debts were taken into consideration in deductions on the vendor's books.
But that doesn't mean that the vendor doesn't have a bad debt on its books. GE is the one that took the bad debt deduction in the federal return,
Your Honor,
didn't
and,
it?
And this is, yes, Your Honor is correct that
GE. So you'd have GE taking, the credit card company here, taking the bad debt deduction and have the vendor here taking the bad debt with different taxing authorities, I guess.
Your Honor, here is the distinction, and that's why I say it's a discrete legal issue of statutory interpretation that this case comes down to. It is correct that GE is entitled to deduct the bad debt on line 15 of its tax return, at the same time as it has to recognize the even greater income components that it received, largely from this merchandising discount or servicing fee, that exceeds GE's bad debt losses. GE always made a profit, record is undisputed on that point, and therefore GE, in a portfolio-wide basis, GE made a net profit and had to pay taxes on the net profit. Home Depot, in the structure of the relationship, looks at this portfolio-wide, not account by account. And portfolio-wide, as the BTA recognized, Home Depot prepays the bad debt losses and all of GE's other costs of the program and then deducts that, Your Honor,
GE
on its business expenses on line 26 of its tax return. So that's really the discrete legal issue here. Does Ohio law say that a vendor who prepays bad debt costs that remitted all of the taxes involved here to state authorities, that it cannot get a refund under those circumstances simply because it didn't deduct on line 15?
If GE has no bad debt loss, which is unlikely, but if it does it then refund? If it has no bad debt loss, does it refund then that money to the vendor here?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. Absolutely not.
Why wouldn't you be entitled to that? If the money you paid to GE is for bad debt.
We pay a merchandising fee for them to administer the program. They're helping us administer our own credit program, a program that, if we could, we would simply administer ourselves like in the old Ma and Pa.
Counsel, isn't this just a component of the formula that's being utilized in, so Home Depot knows how much they're going to have to pay GE to administer this, and GE says, okay, out of all these credits that we are extending to the individual purchasers, we know a certain amount are not going to pay. And so we're going to build that component into the figure that we charge Home Depot to perform the services. We're going to win some, we're going to lose some. And that's how and it's all going to come out in the wash, and that's what we're going to ask Home Depot to pay us either per account or for the entire contract or however they build Home Depot, and we'll take the risk and suffer the loss, and we'll sort it all out with our accountants when it comes to be tax time. And GE, you're protected.
Your Honor, I think Your Honor has summarized it precisely right, and it comes to this core proposition. Home Depot had to, in the nature of the relationship, make GE more than whole to get GE to help it administer its program.
That's the price of doing business.
Oh, no, Your Honor, not exactly. This is Home Depot's credit program, and what it does is that for its special customers, it has to affiliate with a financing company to administer the program and have it help it. But it is Home Depot that bears all of the costs and losses of that program to make the financing company more than whole at the end of the day, or they couldn't get anyone to help them administer their program. So, Your Honors, at the end of the day, it is Home Depot that paid the tax and bore all the costs of the program. GE makes a profit at the end of the day. Home Depot has to compensate it to make it whole.
Just because GE makes a profit, okay, in year one, GE says to Home Depot, it's going to cost you X amount of dollars in order for us to provide this service to your clients so that, or customers, so they can buy on credit or on time. And then they go through that year, and at the end of the year, GE figures out how much money they were able to collect as opposed to how much money they should have collected. They build in that figure, and the next year, and this is all hypothetical, they go back to Home Depot and say, okay, our fee this year is going to be increased because we lost money or more than we anticipated. We've adjusted it in some way, and Home Depot pays them then to continue with this program. And it, again, it's just a component in the formula as to how GE is going to structure its fee that it charges Home Depot. And Home Depot, one year is going to pay, you know, X amount per contract, and then next year that may be increased because GE may or may not have made as large a profit as it anticipated.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I think the undisputed testimony, the uniform testimony on both the Home Depot and the GE side was that, as the BTA recognized, with the sophisticated modeling, GE always made a profit. But I think that mm-hmm. point is
Profit and then there's profit. If they didn't make as much as they wanted, they will bump up their costs.
But Your Honor, I think the undeniable, the irrefutable conclusion that comes out of the fact that GE always made a profit is that losses from the program, including costs of the program, including those related to bad debt, you know, were in fact borne by Home Depot in the prepayment, the forms of compensation that it provided to GE, both in the merchandising discount and otherwise. And Your Honors, let's look at what the intent of the statutory scheme was, because I think that, you know.
Well, before you get into that, I'm still a little confused about the fact here. Are you claiming that the entire service fee should be a deduction for sales tax for bad debt, or a portion of it? I'm a little confused as to what your argument is here.
Well, Your Honor, we didn't even reach that point, you know, below, because the BTA, the tax commissioner, and then the BTA concluded that unless Home Depot, you know, wrote off on line 15 of its tax return, this is bad debt. But Your Honor,
at least some of it is.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think there's any question that the merchandising fee, and BTA found this, that the merchandising fee was in fact set, and a component of it was to cover GE's, you know, the bad debts that it anticipated there would be in the GE portfolio. Second, Your Honor, it was part of a structural compensation package. Home Depot, if it, in the old Ma and Pa days, extended the credit directly, it would have been, you know, collecting interest and other potential benefits.
I think we understand all of that. I was just trying to get at
Certainly, what it
is, how much of that you're actually claiming, and what you're asserting is that you're claiming some of it, but on the record, what part of it is not there yet.
But, Your Honor, that really is, in this sense, you know, a distinction without a difference for the following reason. Since the structure of the relationship was Home Depot paid the tax and Home Depot prepaid GE to cover all of GE's costs in the compensation package, including through the merchandising discount fee, and BTA recognized all of this, and GE always made a profit, what's the purpose of the statute? As Your Honor said in the Chrysler case, it's to permit a vendor to get a refund when the customer, and he's paid the tax, when the customer ultimately doesn't pay the tax to the vendor. Here, you have an undisputed record that we paid the tax and we so compensated GE that we covered all of GE's costs, including all
of
its bad.
What do we do with...
If it's returned, you're going to ask for all of it. Is that it?
Your Honor, I think there is no question that, at a minimum, we're entitled to some substantial portion. But I want Your Honors to understand our tax claim. We paid over a 5.5-year period, Home Depot, $340 million to the state of Ohio. Our refund claim was approximately 0.33% of that amount over a 5.5-year period. We sought only the amounts that were expressly written off as bad debt by GE because we not only paid the tax, we also paid GE more than that.
But doesn't the statute say that the bad debt must be written off by the vendor, not by the vendor's financing agent?
This is the narrow question of statutory interpretation. And
but
is this
it's
court-
what we have to concern ourselves with.
Yes, but Your Honor,
you can't read that the vendor may deduct the bad debt of its financing agent even though it paid the tax because the statute doesn't allow for that.
Actually, what the statute says, it has two parts, Your Honor. It says that it'll be bad debt if it may be claimed as a deduction under IRS 166, but it also goes on to say that the deduction must be charged off as uncollectible on the books of the vendor.
It says on the books of the vendor.
And we do that, Your Honor, through the business expense that we recognize and deduct on our taxes from what we pay to GE.
But you don't carry the receivable on your books.
Your Honor, we carry the business expense of having a financing company administer the program and having to pay them merchandising fees and giving them other benefits. And that we deduct. I think that under Ohio law, and this court has made this very clear in the adoption of Zouch case, that even where there's strict construction of a statute, you try and interpret the statutes so that you don't have an unjust or unreasonable result.
You need to sum up, Mr. Mastro, your time is well over.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I will, I have my rebuttal, so I thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Clifford.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Damian Clifford. I'm here on behalf of the Tax Commissioner. I think the court has raised some very important questions about alleged facts in this case. And I think the important thing is to actually look at what the facts are of the case. And I'll start with that, and then I'll go answer the questions, the claims, which are completely unsubstantiated by the record. GE is the owner of all these accounts. GE makes the determination of whether it's going to issue credit to these consumers. It's not accounts owned by Home Depot. That's just false. At no time does Home Depot have any right or interest to these accounts, have any right or interest in payment, any right in the indebtedness created when a customer uses a Home Depot credit card.
I assume GE decides when the debt is a bad debt.
That is correct also.
Vendor here, Home Depot doesn't have anything to say about that, I assume.
Home Depot has no control over that.
And the customer has to fill out an application and that has to be approved by GE in order to, and they will set the amount of credit that will be extended, which will dictate the amount of merchandise which will be purchased, and that is an arrangement between the customer and GE. Is that true?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. What happens is the customer comes into Home Depot store, they fill an application, the application is submitted electronically to GE. GE looks at the customer's credit history, all other considerations it make. It decides how much of a credit limit they will have. The agreement is between GE and the customer. The customer then submits the credit card to Home Depot for purchases. After that purchase is made, at the end of each day on every transaction, this is critical, the GE submits the price and the sales tax to Home Depot. So the claim that Home Depot is somehow remitting sales tax on its own is, again, not supported by the record. And this is clear in the contract. What it says in the contract, All credit losses on accounts shall be solely borne at the expense of the bank and shall not be passed on to the retailer.
The bank being GE.
Bank being GE, the retailer being Home Depot.
Mr. Clifford, is it equally clear that Home Depot has paid the sales tax for some of the debts that have been written off by GE in the financing?
Well, I would say that GE, they've remitted the sales tax to the state of Ohio, but GE with
the— Your use of the pronoun is confusing. Home Depot has remitted the sales tax?
Home Depot has remitted the sales tax, but at the end of each day, what happens is GE submits the actual price of the purchase plus the applicable sales tax to Home Depot. So Home Depot never pays sales tax out of its pocket. And if we also look at 5739-12A and 12B, the amount of sales tax collected by the vendor is not remitted to the state until the 23rd day following the month in which the previous purchases were made. And if we look at B1, this claim that they've paid $340 million over this, five-year period, okay? $340 million. We look at B1. B1 says 0.75% can be discounted if the vendor timely remits sales tax. Well, while I was sitting waiting for the wonderful discussions this morning about the intentional tort, I came to the conclusion of how much if Home Depot timely remitted sales tax to the state of Ohio would be $2.55 million. So that would be almost double the amount they're seeking in the refund claim they would have been able to obtain as a deduction in credit for timely remitting sales tax. So any claim that they somehow need this money and they're
by
not
timely remitting.
If they remitted on the 23rd month following the sales transaction.
23rd day.
23rd day, I'm sorry, yes, that's correct.
Following this, and the funds for the sale are remitted on a daily basis.
GE submits to Home Depot on a daily basis the purchase price plus the sales tax. So at no time does Home Depot actually remit sales tax of its own pocket. Instead, all it's remitting is the amount of money that GE forwarded to it on the days in the month preceding the 23rd day after the purchases were made. So,
but it's entitled, if it makes this timely deposit of the sales tax, it's entitled to that. And if it were qualified under the statutes, it would also be entitled to a refund.
Well,
the two are not interconnected. The point is, there's really no relationship between the discount for timely deposit.
Under the statute, that's correct. There's no correlation. However, what I'm saying is the fact that Home Depot claims they're remitting sales tax is untrue.
So basically, they're a conduit for the sales tax.
Correct.
All right. What about distinguishing or addressing the Chrysler case in relationship to Home Depot that seems to be heavily relied upon by your opponent?
I think if we look at paragraph 25 of the Chrysler decision, it says, prior to the sale and assignment of retail installment contract to Chrysler, the dealer has no claim to a bad debt deduction because the dealer has no bad debt. After the retail installment contract was assigned to Chrysler and the dealer has been paid in full, the dealer could not claim a bad debt deduction. After the dealer assigned the retail installment contract to Chrysler, the customer's debt to the dealer was paid in full, including any amount owed to the dealer for sales tax. As far as the dealer is concerned, the sale of the retail installment contract to Chrysler produces the same result as if the customer had paid off the contract. Thus, the dealer never suffers any bad debt that it could assert or that Chrysler could assert as a dealer assignee. The way that's related is the same thing here. The amount of money from the purchase made by a consumer using a credit card, in this case, is owed to GE. Home Depot does not change in any manner whether the customer defaults to GE or they pay the customer in full. There's no distinguishing because Home Depot is never owed the bad debt. And this, again, even though not only does the contract say that, Mike Mitchell, the director of credit for Home Depot, and Eugene Thorncroft, who's at GE, admit GE and Monogram solely bear the risk of loss between Home Depot and the private label credit card companies. So to somehow claim that Home Depot has suffered this loss is just completely untrue.
If I understand the transaction, financial transaction, you collect the purchase price, the sales tax, you remit it to Home Depot, they pay the sales tax out of what you've collected and given them, correct? correct?
Well, I represent the tax commissioner.
Speaking you generically, okay.
Yes. GE, yes.
GE. Then if we were to allow a refund of those taxes to Home Depot, wouldn't they be obligated to turn right around and give that refund to your company? Because they've not suffered any of the loss for that. Your company has. So it seems to me even if we were to rule in their favor, it would have to go back to GE because GE gave them all the money in the first place.
Well, I would agree that the money would not be owed to GE if Home Depot was successful in this refund claim. That the money at the time of the purchase, if Home Depot gets a refund, I can't say one way or another go to GE, but I would agree that GE is the one who suffers the bad debt loss. And if you look at what the statute says, and this is what everyone was concerned about, in order to qualify under 5731.121, the debt must become worthless or uncollectible, which must be uncollected for at least 6 months, may be claimed as a deduction pursuant to 26 U.S.C. 166, which is the federal provision for bad debt, and then the last part is, must be charged off on the books of the vendor. Home Depot doesn't satisfy the last two prongs. They do not. And Mr. Davis with Ernst & Young, who submitted this refund claim on behalf of Home Depot, said, under federal law, they cannot claim this debt owed to GE on their books because it's not theirs.
And Chrysler isn't exactly this case. You're asking for an extension of the Chrysler doctrine.
Chrysler basically would be if GE came in and submitted a refund claim. The reason it was denied is because GE wasn't a vendor under the statute. Right. This case is more like the dealer in Chrysler who has been paid in full, has no bad debt, is claiming bad debt deduction.
Yeah, Home Depot is in this.
That would be the
shoes of the car dealer.
Right. Right. That would be the closest thing. And here's something else for this court to think about. If Home Depot were correct, if paying a credit card discount satisfy 5739.121, well, all credit card companies impose service fees upon merchants for using those credit cards. It's the adage of, I'll give you, you give me my money now and I'll take a discount. If Home Depot were correct, any vendor who accepts credit cards, who have paid merchant fees or merchant discounts, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, all those vendors could then seek refund claims because under Home Depot's analysis, they paid a service fee which had a bad debt component. Something else which is interesting to note is that there's no indication as to what percentage of the service fee is attributable to bad debt. There's no indication. And if we look at what was submitted, the evidence submitted in this hearing, there's nothing to indicate which one of those transactions were imposed a service fee. Under the contract between Home Depot and GE, not all transactions were imposed a service fee. If we look at, it's on Supplement 137, which is the consumer contract between Home Depot and GE, there is a zero merchant discount if there's no deferral fee, deferral period. Meaning, if you come in and you buy a $500 tractor and you have to pay that value of that tractor in 30 days, there's no service fee charge. If you pay $1,000 for a refrigerator, and there's no deferral period, there's no service fee. If you look at all the transactions submitted by Ernst & Young on behalf of Home Depot, there's no indication one way or another that any of those transactions had a deferral period to which a service fee was then imposed, which goes to our argument raised to the BTA. If Home Depot were correct, the evidence submitted is not supported.
So counsel, really looking at the strict construction principle that we have to apply, there's no question that your position would be the correct one.
That is correct. I want to make sure I get through to everything here. Sales tax advanced by vendor, it's just not true. GE advances the sales tax with the price on a daily basis. Home Depot prepays the bad debt. Again, not true. Home Depot writes off the bad debt. As previously discussed, Mr. Davis testified on direct examination that that's precluded under federal law because they don't own the accounts. GE owns the accounts. And this claim that Home Depot has to have an affiliation with a financing company in order to do this is, again, untrue. When Mr. Mitchell testified on direct examination, he went through and said, listen, this is a business decision made by Home Depot. In this business decision, Home Depot doesn't have to worry about state regulations. Home Depot doesn't have to worry about bad debts because the money's not owed to it.
Your point is that Home Depot could have issued its own credit cards if it wanted
to. They freely admit that, Justice.
Chose not to.
He specifically testified that they could offer the credit and then they wouldn't be imposed a service fee. It also, this program allows customer loyalty, and it allows Home Depot to be in charge of a lower service fee than what would be imposed by other credit card companies. I wanted to quickly jump to the constitutional provisions. As the court is well aware, this is a very high burden that they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that 5739.121 is unconstitutional. They must negate every basis to which it could be. And under an equal protection claim and under a due process claim, it's applied under a rational basis. There was no evidence submitted by Home Depot to indicate that there's an equal protection violation. And under Columbia Gas Transmission, this court has held, if you don't submit any evidence, that's basis enough alone to deny a claim. GE is made whole in this transaction, so is Home Depot. Because GE makes money, who cares? It's a business decision that the GE and Home Depot makes. So to claim somehow that this violates equal protection or violates due process clause is unsubstantiated. And there's no evidence submitted where there's any indication that vendors in the same position as Home Depot or vendors that actually offer credit, which Home Depot does not, have been treated different under the same facts. So as such, I would ask that the decision of the BTA be affirmed as reasonable, lawful. If there's no further questions, I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clifford. Mr. Mastro, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly. No, we are not merely a conduit on paying the tax, and no, we would not owe GE anything in response. The reality is what separates this from Chrysler is that in Chrysler, Chrysler Financial purchased the loan agreement and paid in full 100 cents on the dollar and took it over. Here, this is not paying all of the purchase price and all of the tax, and we're merely a conduit. We pay a merchandising discount fee that was calculated negotiated between the parties to take into account bad debt. Don't and prepay bad debt. Don't take it from me. Take it from the BTA, which expressly found on page 6, quote, Home Depot, quote, prepaid actual bad debts, quote, Home Depot brought forth evidence that a consideration of potential losses for non-payment is made in setting merchant fees for private label credit cards. The reality is that what Home Depot does for its own customers is provide a credit facility for its own customers. Maybe some of you have this card. It's the Home Depot credit card. You would have to have a magnifying glass to find the name of the financing company. It's just for Home Depot customers, special customers, to purchase only at Home Depot, and it's no different than Home Depot bringing somebody in to help service in-home construction and having to compensate them. The BTA recognized that Home Depot paid the tax and incurred the bad debt losses by prepaying them in the financial structure of the deal. That makes this different. That makes this different than Chrysler Financial. That puts this squarely in the category, even under a strict construction of Ohio law, to avoid an unjust or unreasonable result, to avoid the fundamental unfairness of the state holding on to this money when the clear intent of Ohio law was to afford a refund to somebody, the vendor in particular, when a credit transaction goes bust and the consumer never pays the tax. That's what Ohio law is designed to do.
You've used your time, Mr. Mastro.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Counsel, you're excused. We have an admission ceremony following arguments. For those who are here for the admission ceremony, I'll briefly tell you what our procedure is. I'd ask that the presenters please come forward as I announce your name, come to the podium, and tell us briefly why you believe the applicant you're representing would make an excellent member of the Bar of Ohio. I ask that the applicant please, as you're being introduced, please stand in place so we can identify you. At the end of the presentations, I'll ask the applicants to come forward, and Justice O'Donnell will administer the oath of office. The first presenter is Michelle Gorman.
May it please the court, my name is Michelle Gorman. I'm here today to move the admission of Rochelle Brightwell. I've known Ms. Brightwell for the past 6 years. I've practiced law with her for the past 4 years. I've had the opportunity to try cases with her, and am very comfortable representing to the court that she is a great person, an excellent attorney, and I believe she'll make an excellent addition to the Ohio Bar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
James Hsu.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's my pleasure to present Matthew Thomas Dixon. Matthew Thomas Dixon was admitted in Mississippi. He went to Mississippi College School of Law. He has a Juris Doctorate. I have known him since he was in the Troop 5 Boy Scouts at First Methodist Church in Middletown, and he was much smaller then. It's my pleasure to recommend him as a member of the Ohio Supreme Court, before the Ohio Supreme Court. Thank you.
Thank you. Frank Frigiato. Thank you. Sorry, Frank.
Your Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court, if it please the court, my name is Frank Fragiato from Belmont County, Ohio. It is with a great deal of pleasure that I present to you for admission into practice before Ohio, all Ohio courts, Christina Nicole Hyde. Mrs. Hyde has been admitted to practice law in the states of New York and New Jersey and has successfully done so for approximately 6 years. She is married into my family and has moved to Ohio, and a greatest character, a real great person, gonna be a real proud member of the bar. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Eleanor Shalnut.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eleanor Maria Farrell Shalnut. I reside in Cincinnati, Ohio, and practice there, and it is my pleasure to introduce and present Davida H. Isaacs for admission to the Ohio State Bar. I have known her for 3 years. She has served with me on the board of an Intellectual Property Bar Association in Cincinnati. She is a professor at Chase Law School in Northern Kentucky, and she is admitted to practice in New York as well as DC. She has been practicing since 1996, and she would be an excellent addition to the Ohio Bar. Thank you very much.
Walter Riemenschneider.
Gentlemen, judges, I have known Shirley Juarez for over 30 years. She worked for me in my law office when she was going to Baldwin Wallace College. She then moved to California, where she went to law school there and has practiced out there for 22 years. We reconnected when she moved back to here last year, and she has worked extensively with at-risk youths, and has been a very prominent member of the California Bar. I can tell you that she will make a great adjunct to the practice of law in this state. She's a fine young lady. She has great credentials, and I do to present to you Shirley Juarez.
Thank you. Charles Freiberger.
Your Honors, I am Charles Freiberger. I'm with the Thompson Heim Law Firm located in Columbus, Ohio. I'm here to present Michael Marzalis for admission to the Bar of Ohio. I've known Michael since 2000, worked with him on several matters, and I believe he'll make an excellent addition to the Ohio Bar.
Thank you. Laura Barish Taylor.
May it please the court. My name is Laura Barish Taylor. I'm here on behalf of Amanda Miller. I have known Amanda Miller for a year. We are colleagues in the intellectual property department of Benesch Friedlander, and I highly recommend Amanda Miller for admission to the Ohio bar, as she is professional, diligent, and she is of outstanding character.
Thank you. David Hedden.
May it please the court. I'm here to present Mark Montana for admission to the bar. Mark is admitted to the bar in New Jersey. He was admitted about 20 years ago. He's a colleague of mine at Ashland, where I work in Dublin, Ohio. He's been a colleague of mine for about a year, and I've had an opportunity to consult with him about legal matters and watch him interact with clients. I find him very diligent, and he has very good relationships with the clients there. He conducts himself in a highly professional, ethical, and civil manner, and I highly recommend him for admission to the Ohio Bar.
Thank you. Randall Smith.
Morning. May it please the court, I'm Randall Smith, an attorney of Miami Valley Fair Housing. I'm here to present Sarah Weber Patel for admission to the bar. Sarah's career has demonstrated a tireless commitment to public service. She was the public defender in the Missouri for a long time. References there were outstanding, and I have worked with her in the past year at Miami Valley Fair Housing representing victims of predatory lending, and she has proven to be a tireless resource for our office, and I highly recommend her admission to the bar.
Thank you. Is Mr. Gerhardstein here? Janice Quatman.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court. I am here to present for admission to the bar Elizabeth Ann Scott. I have known Ms. Scott for the past 10 years, and she is presently a member of good standing of the New York Bar. She is diligent, and she would be a wonderful addition to the Ohio Bar. Thank you.
Travis Jackson.
May it please the court. My name is Travis Jackson, and I am an attorney with the Jones Day office here in Columbus, and I have the privilege today of presenting Jan Smith for admission to our bar. Over the past year, I've had the privilege of working with Jan, and I've seen her dedication to her clients as well as to her colleagues, and I also know from her background in Pittsburgh that she cares greatly about providing legal services to individuals and organizations without the means to pay for those services. And so I respectfully submit her application.
Thank you. Mark Radio.
May it please the court. My name is Mark Radio. I'm a partner with the law firm of Frantz Ward in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm honored to be here this morning to present a man of surpassing generosity and intelligence. I have known him for as long as I have had a memory. He is my cousin, he is my friend, and he is one of my inspirations to pursue the practice of law. And so I humbly submit Tyler Joseph Smith for admission to the bar of the state of Ohio.
Thank you. Is there a motion that the applicants be admitted to the bar of Ohio?
So moved.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The applicants, will you please come forward and form a single line across the first step. The oath will be administered by Justice O'Donnell.
Good morning. Could you kindly raise your right hand? I, and state your name.
I, Amanda Morris.
Hereby swear. That I will support the Constitution and laws of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution and laws of the United States.
The Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio.
The Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio.
And I will abide by the Ohio rules of professional conduct.
And I will abide by the Ohio rules of professional conduct.
In my capacity as an attorney and officer of the court, I will conduct myself with dignity and civility. And show respect toward judges, court staff, and clients. Fellow professionals and all other persons. I will honestly, faithfully, and competently. Discharge the duties of an attorney at law. And this I do. As I shall answer unto God. Congratulations, we got through it. We don't have to come back and do it again.
On behalf of the court, welcome to the bar, and let you know that we have a very strong bar in Ohio. We're very proud of our bar, and we hope that you are successful as a member of the Ohio Bar. Congratulations. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye.